So we're just a couple months in to this new podcast, the Property Management Business Podcast, and our format has primarily been for me to either interview someone or to speak for a few minutes, take a couple questions, and then close out there. Well, the problem is I'm getting so many questions sent in by all of you that I'm falling behind in answering questions. So for this episode, we're going to do something a little bit different. I'm simply going to go through questions that you all have sent to me, and we'll see how far we get in the time that we have. But a couple of the questions I'm going to hit on just to preview. We've got a question about, can a property management business really run by itself? Should you reduce your pricing for an owner client who has a lot of properties? What exactly is a policy and procedure manual? Should you let owners do their own repairs? And what do you do when a security deposit dispute erupts between an owner and a tenant? We'll see if we can get through even more, but we will at least hit those five. Here we go. Welcome, my friends, to another episode of the Property Management Business Podcast. I am your host, Mark Cunningham. We are going into questions that you have today for me. So we're going to jump right in. Here we go. Rhonda asks this, Mark, I hear so many property management companies talk about how they want to structure their business to run by itself or run on autopilot. And she has that word in air quotes. I haven't been able to figure out how to do this. Do you have any advice or suggestions? Rhonda, I'm so glad you asked that question. So we've been doing this business for a long time. My dad started this business in 1978. We're pretty large. I am not heavily involved in the day-to-day operations. I couldn't tell you how many leases we signed this week. Now, I can tell you every Wednesday because I get that number sent to me every Wednesday. Couldn't tell you how many maintenance calls we've had in the last week, but I'll be able to tell you at the end of the month how many maintenance calls we've had for the month because I track that. Couldn't tell you today how many tenants are delinquent, but I would be able to tell you every Wednesday exactly how many tenants we have delinquent because I track that from a reporting side of things. So Rhonda, I believe it is incorrect for anybody to be saying things like this. Hey, your business can run itself if you just set it up properly. Your business doesn't need you. It can run on autopilot. It can work while you sleep. I think that is just peddling fake information. Now, maybe I'm just naive. Maybe I'm too much of a control freak. But no property management business in the many years I have been doing this, and I've talked to many, many property management companies, none of them can run on their own. There's no such thing as running on autopilot or you being completely uninvolved. What that means when people say that is they simply have people, other people in the weeds doing the day-to-day operations. So that is absolutely possible. I have people that do the day-to-day. I don't take maintenance calls. I don't show properties. I don't have to do a lot of those things. Now, I need to track those things. So does my business run on autopilot? No, it's not automatic. We've got people working very, very hard in there. We are as systems and as process dependent as any company out there. I would venture to say there's not a company around that is more process dependent, system dependent, checklist dependent, whatever you want to call it, as we are. We've got position specific system manuals for every position in our company. We've got more checklists than we can count, and you can download samples of all of ours and see them right at pmbuild.com. So I do not misunderstand the importance of having a process, the importance of having a system, but that doesn't make the business run by itself. The property management business, by its very nature, is labor intensive. We're not a software company. Those individuals that have tried to build their PM company as a software company typically crash and burn. It's only a matter of time because you're dealing with people, people who have real problems, people who lose their jobs, people that wake up with no hot water and they're angry. And yes, you want to automate and lean into software as much as you can, but at the end of the day, I believe to be successful, you have to recognize the fact that you're in the people business, and being in the people business means you're going to lean into people. It's not going to run itself. It's not going to run on autopilot. You want to get the very best people you can get to run the processes, to run the systems, and as you scale, Rhonda, you can continue to baby step out of the front lines, but that doesn't mean you can't pay, that doesn't mean you shouldn't. And you must be paying attention to what's going on the front lines. And you must be paying attention to the numbers so that if something starts to get a little bit misaligned, you're made aware of that very, very quickly. So just make sure, Rhonda, that you have a very proper perspective on structuring and running your company the bigger it gets. Hope that helps. Mary reached out and said, Mark, love your podcast. Thank you, Mary. What do you say when an owner says something like, I have quite a few properties. Do you offer discounts for bulk properties? Great question, Mary. Comes up all the time. So a prospective owner client reaches out and says, hey, I've got a lot of properties here. I see you charge X. If I give you all my properties, will you discount that for me? I expect a discount because I'm giving you a lot of properties. Now, there's no right or wrong with this. This is truly just a business decision you want to make. So this is strictly my opinion. I am not saying I'm right, but it's my opinion on how to do this. A couple things you want to keep in mind. If somebody comes to you with multiple properties, what truly are the advantages of having one owner with 10 properties versus 10 owners with 10 properties? There's only one. The only advantage is you have one relationship in place versus 10 relationships in place. Now, that could be a disadvantage as well, because what if that relationship starts to go sour? What if suddenly that owner doesn't like what you're doing? So it's not necessarily a huge benefit. It might be a time saver because you don't have to call 10 different people. You just call one person, but it doesn't save you operationally or organizationally. Do you have different relationships with those tenants because it's one owner versus 10 owners on your 10 properties? No. You manage every property still the same. It doesn't save you any time on maintenance, doesn't save you any time on leasing, doesn't save you any time on anything other than talking to one owner versus multiple property owners. Now, if this owner truly has a portfolio that is attractive to you, let's say they come to you and these are 10 high-end properties and they're close to your office, they're executive homes, they're beautiful, they're brand new, and the rental rates are high. Well, then sure, consider offering a lower price point to this owner client because it would be a good portfolio for you to manage. So I think you're fine to negotiate that, those types of things. Our philosophy, our rule on this is almost everything. Let me take that back. I've already butchered it. We will negotiate the terms of our property management agreement, but we will never negotiate away control. We will negotiate the terms, but we will never negotiate away control. So if he says, hey, will you take your management fee from X to X minus one? We'll consider that. But if he says something like this, hey, I would like to be involved in the selection of all the tenants. Okay, now you're asking for me to give up an operational aspect of control that I have to have in order to successfully manage your properties. So no, that's not a negotiation point. You cannot negotiate away control of the management. And I don't mean manipulative control. I just mean the control that you need to effectively manage those properties. You're the expert. You understand your local and state laws. You understand fair housing. You understand trust accounting. Your owner doesn't understand those things. So don't negotiate away that side of things. But should you negotiate pricing, Mary, completely up to you. How bad do you want the portfolio? How good is the owner client? And I was referring to an owner client that maybe has a large portfolio. To take this into a little different area, we get very leery when an owner client contacts us to consider hiring us in the management of their portfolio. The bigger the portfolio, the more leery I get, because big owner clients are typically going to ask for more than smaller owner clients. They may ask for a fee reduction. They may ask for you to do something special for them because they have such a big portfolio. I've talked to property management companies, Mary. You're not going to believe this, Mary. I've had PM companies call me and they've said, Mark, this owner client wants to give me 50 doors to manage, which would just be great for my company, but they want me to use their software. So I use, let's say Rentvine as my software, but they want me to use their own software, ABC software. So I'd have to kind of learn their new software. What do you think? And I just kind of roll my eyes and say, what do I think? I think that's one of the more stupid ideas I've ever heard. No, I'm not going to learn a new software to manage your portfolio. If you give me the key to the front door of your property to manage, along with that key must come a high degree of control and a high degree of trust. I know the best software that's out there. I think it's Rentvine. That's what we use. So I'm going to put you into my software package. I'm not going to run things your way. If you want to run things your way, Mr. Owner, that's great. Go do it. But if you want to come to me, then I will manage your property in my program. You don't go to your doctor and say, hey, I want you to do surgery on me. But oh, by the way, when you do that surgery, I want you to use my operating tools. Like here's my scalpel. Just use this one. And on the lights that you use, yeah, please use my light bulbs. And I have my own personal favorite brand of stitches I want you to use to sew me up with. Like that doesn't happen. You trust the expert. You, my friends, are the property management expert. Mary, you're the expert. Okay, you got me going on a tangent there, Mary. Tara says, Mark, I'm embarrassed to ask this, but what exactly is a policy and procedure manual? Tara, don't be embarrassed. Nobody really knows, Tara. Nobody really knows what a policy and procedure manual is, but you need to be able to pretend you do so that you sound smart in this industry, Tara. So what a property and procedure manual is, most states, many real estate commissions, they require property management companies to contain a policy and procedure manual. Now, most states will have a list of things they want to see within that policy and procedure manual. So I'm here in Colorado. Our real estate commission says you must have a P&P, and sometimes they refer to it with different terminology, but it's generally referred to as a P&P manual. You must have a P&P manual for your company, and it must cover the following things. And then there'll be a laundry list. And a lot of it relates to things like trust accounting. A lot of it relates to things like rent collection. How should rents be handled? It just says that you have to have policies. You have to have some processes in place around certain parts of the business. Now, in some states, you don't need a policy and procedure manual whatsoever. In other states, you just need something that says policy and procedure manual on the front cover. And when you get audited, you pull that off the shelf. You blow the dust off it, you hand it to the auditor, and they look it over and say, okay, yep, you're good. In other states, you need to be utilizing that on a day-to-day basis. So what we do in our company, we technically don't call this a policy and procedure manual. Now, we're big on policies. We're big on procedures. We have position-specific system manuals, meaning every position in our company, our director of leasing, our director of accounting, our resident services coordinator, our vice president of operations, our vice president of property management, and even me as the president, we have position-specific system manuals. It defines what your job is. It defines how to do it. These are so important, Tara. These are essential for the success of your business. Now, if you're a one-man or one-woman shop, you probably don't need that because you're doing it all anyway. But as you start to grow, as you start to scale, you've got to have these things in place. One of the reasons it's so important is for consistency. I want every applicant who contacts our office treated the same. Not just for fair housing, but just from a consistency of process standpoint. Imagine if you didn't have a standardized process for processing applications. Like we all have that. We all understand that. But that's the most basic form. Imagine if two people turn in applications and one of them, you look at their credit score, and the other one, all you do is call the ex-landlord. That would not go well. You need to have standardization and consistency in how you process applications. Well, it's the same thing as it relates to your position-specific system manuals. It also makes your people, it makes you less reliant on your people. If you are solely reliant on your people to do their job and understand their job, that doesn't bode well for the company. This happens most commonly in the accounting position because most property managers aren't good at accounting. So I've talked to many property managers and they say something like this. Oh, if my accounting person ever left, I would be up a paddle. Up a paddle? Up a creek without a paddle. There we go. I'm mixing my analogies there. I would be up a creek without a paddle, Mark, if my accounting person left because I have no clue how they balance the books. I have no clue how they work in the software and pay the owners and pay the bills. Whew, I'm just so glad I have them. that should make the hairs on the back of your neck stand up if you hear someone say that, or if you say that, because you need to have a clue on how that process works. Say, well, Mark, I don't have time. My friends, I don't have time to know how our accounting process works. I can barely log into our software. I can. I'm rather proud that most of the time, probably 75%, I'm able to log into our RentVine software without having to call my number two and ask her what button to click. I'm pretty proud of myself for that. And once I'm in there, I can play around just enough without breaking things. But if something happened to my director of accounting and something happened to my VP of operations, who's like her boss, and something happened to our other person that does some part-time accounting, if all three of them suddenly quit tomorrow, and now it's time to close out our trust account next month, and there's nobody there, I could pull out our Director of Accounting System manual, and I could muddle through on what to do, because it would tell me, hey, Mark, here's how you log in. And I'd be like, oh, okay, great, I got that done. What's step number two? Okay, here's how you enter a tenant payment into the system. Oh, okay, great. I can figure that out because it's giving me the step-by-step. Here's how you pay a bill. Here's how you pay an owner. Here's how you generate the owner statement. All the system manual needs to do is to be able to help the next person in line muddle through in the case of emergency. Now, I could give you 10 more reasons why you want to have system manuals. It increases the value of your business, helps you sleep better at night, creates consistency, makes the process simpler. There's a laundry list of reasons. So for us, when we get audited and they ask for our policy and procedure manual, we say, oh, okay, here's our system manuals. So they're there. And then we do have a office policy guide as well that talks about some of the things that typical policy and procedure manuals require. Things like key storage. Where do you store your keys? Security of leases. How do you protect your owner's social security numbers? So that's not position specific for us. That's in no one system manual. That's just in our office policy. Talks about things like where to park, what time the office opens, how do you request time off if you're an employee, all those kind of things. So when we marry our office policy manual with our actual position-specific system manual, now we have everything we need in place for a policy and procedure manual. Tara, jump on our website, Jump on our website, pmbuild.com. Go to the system manual page, download samples of every one of our system manuals. You can copy paste right off that PDF, or if you want them in editable format, you can even purchase our full package of system manuals there, which, by the way, to give my quick sales pitch here, we just recently did update for 2024. All of our stuff, our forms, packages, our system manuals, our docs, our management agreements, our leases, everything is updated for 2024. And you can find those on PM Build as samples. Okay, what do we have next here? Beth says, Mark, some of my owners are requesting if they can do their own repairs. Should I let them? Oh, Beth, I feel sorry for you. We get this too. It's hard, isn't it? Repairs are the hardest part of what we do. And sometimes you have owners that want to do their repairs. Now, this is also, as I said earlier, this is not a right or wrong. This is simply a business decision that you have to make. Our policy is this. Now, I'm not saying you should do this, but this is what we say. So an owner is considering hiring us and they say, hey, I want to do my own repairs. And we say, oh, okay, well, let me explain the way our process works as it relates to repairs, Mr. Owner. And by the way, anytime an owner has a question, you should always answer it with, oh, okay, let me explain to you the way our process works, because we're going to pivot to what our process is. And then we explain our full process, how repair requests come in, how we screen our vendors. That's a big deal. We screen our vendors on quality of work, on price, and on speed, how quick they can get there. Do they do good work? And what do they charge? We make sure all of our vendors are licensed. We make sure that they have everything in place from an insurance standpoint. When a repair request come in, we go fast, fast, fast on that, get that taken care of for them. So, Mr. Owner, while your property is occupied by a tenant, we do need to control the maintenance process to ensure that the tenant experience is proper and the property is properly maintained. So we would have to control that process. Now here's why I would go down a little rabbit hole. If you are like, I want to give the owner the option, then here's what I recommend you say. Say what I just said, and then say, so what I could do is I could put you into the system as the first point of contact for a repair, but I can't guarantee that call will be made. Because if the repair request comes in the middle of the night, it's an emergency. We have emergency processes in place. So I will do my best to contact you as the first person on the list, but I can't guarantee it, Mr. Owner, number one. And number two, if we call you because there's a water leak and you don't answer the phone because you're taking a nap on the couch or you're on vacation for that weekend, we're going to go right on to vendor number two. So I'm not going to call you and leave a message and wait and wait and wait to hear back from you, even if I'm going to allow you to do some of the maintenance. Now, I don't recommend you even allow them to do that at all, but if you're going to go that route, that's an option. Part two of what we say, and I think this is what really works, is we say, but what we can do, Mr. Owner, is when the property goes vacant, you are welcome to come in and do any make-ready repair work you want to do. Knock yourself out. You want to repaint the walls, you want to replace whatever you want to replace, the light fixtures and do whatever, that's totally fine. So on the make ready, absolutely, you can do whatever you want to do. But while the property is occupied, we do need to control access, we do need to control the maintenance. And what we have found over time is if you can give the owners that level of control, the control of taking care of the property while it's vacant, most of them are pretty good with that. So they're okay with that. They're okay with not doing maintenance on an occupied property as long as you can let them do the maintenance on a vacant. So give that a shot, Beth, and see if that doesn't work better for your owner's clients. All right, we are on question number five. By the way, if you have questions, my friends, jump on our website, pmbuild.com. You can click the Contact Us button. Type in your question right there. That will come directly to me, and I will do my best to answer that question on a future podcast. So Richard asks, Mark, sometimes we have owners who dispute our security deposit charges that we want to charge or not charge to tenants. We feel that we're stuck in the middle. What do we do? That's a very good question, Richard. You want to do a couple things here, Richard. Number one, you want to have a clause in your property management agreement that clearly states you as the property management professional have the authority, the full authority, to complete the security deposit disposition, meaning you will decide what should be charged on the security deposit return. You are the one that has to follow your laws in your state as it relates to security deposit. That's on you, not the owner. Owners don't understand security deposit returns because they think of in terms of black and white. They think, this tack hole was not in the wall when the tenant moved in. It's there now. They should be charged. They think this wall was freshly painted when the tenant moved in. It is now smudged. It should be charged. This carpet was cleaned and beautiful and fresh when they moved in. It is no longer clean and beautiful and fresh. Tenant should be charged. Now, if you're thinking in black and white terms, yeah, that kind of makes sense. The problem is security deposit return law is not black and white. It is very, very gray. And if you've been in this business for any period of time, you understand that many states have laws governing security deposit returns. You should know if yours does. You should also know if your state has specific laws pertaining to what is wear and tear versus what is damage. In Colorado, we are a very highly regulated state, and we actually have legal information written on wear and tear versus damage. What it is, what it is not. How to decide if that thing that the owner views as damage should actually legally be considered wear and tear. How do you decide? Number one, look to see if your state has any guidance on that. If your state does not have guidance on that, HUD does. HUD has documentation that defines what wear and tear versus damage is. Now, it's pretty old. The guidance that HUD gives is actually pretty fair. I almost think it leans landlord on wear and tear versus damage as compared to states the last couple of years. So if you read the guidance, you'll probably be happy with it. You think, yeah, those are things that I should be able to charge my tenant for. So you want to put that somewhere on your website, Richard. Put somewhere on your website explaining the difference between wear and tear versus damage. So when an owner client says, well, gosh, that tack hole in the wall wasn't there when they moved in, that's damage. Fix it and charge them. You'd say, no, that's actually considered wear and tear. And then you follow it up, and this is the important part. you follow that up with, let me send you a link from my website that will explain to you exactly what wear and tear versus damage is, Mr. Owner. By having that information on your website, Richard, you're going to help yourself. You're going to create more authority for yourself because it's not just you saying it. It's you maybe linking to HUD, you showing it on the website. So put as much as you can on your website on that. Point to your local municipality laws, point to your state laws, point to HUD, but you need to make sure you're controlling that. Now, if the owner doesn't accept that, if they say, no, I demand you charge for the tack holes, or I demand you charge for the carpet that is no longer clean, that's when you can explain to them the concept of life expectancy of units, or excuse me, life expectancy of mechanical components. Did you know that legally paint has a life expectancy? And once the life expectancy has been exceeded, you cannot charge for damage to that area if the life expectancy has been exceeded. You can't charge for carpet. So here's an example. Let's pretend that the carpet is trashed and they spilled paint all over the carpet. It was obvious damage. There's paint all over the place. What are you going to do? If the carpet was brand new when they moved in and they only moved in 1 year ago, you could charge for some of the carpet replacement. Could you charge all of it? No, you couldn't, because the carpet is 1 year into its life. Typical life expectancy per HUD guidelines on renter carpet is about 5 years. So let's pretend you move in a tenant into a property, brand new. Carpet is brand new and it's beautiful. The tenant is there for 7 years. Tenant moves out, you're walking the property, and they did trash the carpet. There's paint spilled all over the carpet. Just paint and grease and oil. It's not just wear and tear, it's grease and oil. So you think, well, gosh, I'm going to charge the tenant for this damage to the carpet. Well, hold on, not so fast. How old is that carpet? Oh, it's 7 years old. Oh, I'm sorry, do not collect. What is it? Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. The carpet has exceeded its life. It's 7 years old. So it doesn't matter if that was damage or not. The fact is it's exceeded its life expectancy. You cannot charge for that. Now, here's where it gets nuanced. Same thing with paint. If they scuffed up the walls beyond belief and the paint expectancy has exceeded its life value, which is typically 3 to 5 years in rentals, same thing, you can't charge. Now, if there's a hole in the wall, yes, you can charge for a hole in the wall. But you have to understand that things like paint and carpet, and those are the most common, they have life expectancy to them, and you need to document that. If you don't have that documented, check with your state, and if your state doesn't have it, Google it with HUD. That's all. Maybe we'll try to put a link in the show notes here on HUD life expectancy docs. It's just a very straightforward doc put out by HUD, and we have a page on our website on that. Maybe I'll link to the page on our website where we explain the difference between owners. Great question, Richard. Okay, we've got time here for one more question. This comes from Reagan, and Reagan says, Mark, sometimes I have an owner client who is taking an excessively long time to prep their own unit between turns. Should I consider canceling the management agreement if they're taking too long? That's a great question, Reagan. So tenant moves out of a property and the owner says something like this. Hey, hold on. Don't do anything. I think I want to do my own make ready, or I think I might sell it. So I'll call you in a few weeks. Don't do anything. You say, oh, okay. But now you get uncomfortable because that property is just sitting there and you're not driving by. You're not looking at it. You're not mowing the lawn, or maybe you are mowing the lawn. You're not making sure that the water isn't leaking. Like, you're not actively managing the property because the owner's either doing the make ready themselves, or they have told you to wait and not do anything. But legally, my friends, do you have a legal obligation there? Yes, you do. You are still legally managing that property. And per the terms of your property management agreement, you have legal obligations. So at a minimum, I would suggest you have the owner sign some type of release of liability form, which basically would say, hey, practically speaking, and I know this is not legal, I'm not giving legal advice here. I never give legal advice, but it's kind of like you're pausing the property management agreement. You're saying, hey, per the PMA, I'm supposed to be actively leasing, I'm supposed to be managing, I'm supposed to be doing all this stuff. However, Mr. Owner, you told me that for the next 4 weeks, you're going to be in there doing the work. So I want you to sign this document, which acknowledges that I'm not checking the property, I'm not driving by, I'm not mowing the lawn, I'm not doing anything. So if something happens to the property, if somebody breaks in, that is not on me. I am not liable for any aspect. Have your attorney draw something like that up. Now, some attorneys would say that you can't do that, Mark. You're in an agency relationship. You can't pause an agency doc. And I get it. I'm not saying you can. But at a minimum, put something like that in place. And if it's going to take too long, like if the property burned down and it's going to take them 4 months to rebuild it, then just cancel your PMA and sign a new PMA once that owner comes back on board. Great question, Reagan. Great questions from everybody. I hope you found that useful. If we get a whole lot of new questions, maybe we'll make this a regular occurrence where I can just go through random questions. You know, I gave an example a few minutes ago of a potential big owner client who says to the property manager, hey, I want you to manage these 20, 30, 40 properties, and I want you to use my software. And I said, my recommendation is to say, no, we're going to use our own software. And I referred to the software we use. We use Rentvine, R-E-N-T-V-I-N-E, Rentvine. We switched over to Rentvine from one of the big providers in our industry almost 3 years ago. We're about 2.5 years into our utilizing Rentvine, and I am very glad we did so. People often ask me, Mark, why did you switch? And it's basically that we were not happy with our current property management software service. The product was okay, but we saw the service declining, declining, declining. I am not somebody who jumps on to the latest fad, so we did our due diligence, but I'm often asked why we did it. So let me give you the top reasons that we switched over to Rentvine. Now, as you heard me say earlier, you're going to be like, well, Mark, now, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm going to catch you on this one, Mark. You said, Mark, that you hardly even know how to log into your software. So why should I believe you when you recommend software? And you would be right. I do hardly know how to log into my software, but my team does. All of our 25 people, whatever we have, they know how to log in. And if they didn't like this software, believe me, they would be telling me all about it. I would hear every day how much they didn't like it. And they don't. They tell me they like the software. So don't believe Mark. Believe my team, who is very, very quick to complain to me when they don't like something. But there are some aspects that I really think set Rentvine apart from the other property management softwares out there. One of them is this is truly comprehensive. So historically, we've always believed that we want the best software. We want the best website. And if those two things don't talk, so be it. We want the best applicant screening software. And if those three things don't talk, so be it. We'll figure out how to make that happen. We want the best screening and we want the best marketing. Like all those things, we just want the best. And the problem for years is those things were all very isolated and siloed and they didn't talk together. Well, we use PMW, that's Property Manager Websites, and we believe that's the best website company out there, hands down. Huge fan. Rentvine is like a sister company of PMW. So that was a huge deal for us because now our website can talk to our software. We also used Rent Screener to screen our applicant screening process. We believed that was the hands down best product out there. Well, that's also a sister company under Rentvine. It's under their umbrella. So all of these different things now talk seamlessly, which is wonderful for us. So when somebody applies to rent a property on our website, it automatically populates into Rentvine, we can automatically screen right in there. Now, for people that are using different programs to do things like that, something else that Rentvine does very uniquely is they have a completely open API. If you don't know what an API is, don't worry, neither do I. But apparently, it means softwares can talk to each other. So that's, if you're a tech nerd, then you just got really excited about an open API. I'm just reading the words because I truly don't know what API stands for, but I do know that it means softwares can talk to each other. So that's there for you if you like that. Their customer service, my friends, is hands down. I know the owner personally, but I didn't know him before we switched to PMW. So I've gotten to know him over the years. Their customer service, ask anybody who uses them, is unbelievable. I email things, my team emails things, and we'll typically get a response same day. So they're very, very high on customer service. And the biggest thing I like is they're continuing to improve. I believe this is the cleanest software there is. I think it's the easiest software there is. It is the most modern software there is. Now, if you're thinking of selling your property management business in the next 2 years, don't worry about anything I just said. Do not switch your software. But if you're in this for the long haul, if you're not going anywhere, you want a software that's going to be improving your business operation, and I think you ought to reach out. We'll put a link. Get a demo. Just get a demo from the friends at RentVine. Tell them Mark sent you. Check them out. It may be worth considering if you want to take your business to the next level like we did. So this podcast is dropping on Tuesday, March 26th. And yes, as a podcaster, I have to say it's dropping because that's what cool podcasters say. For those of you that aren't cool, it means the podcast goes live and you'll be able to download it and listen to it on the 26th. But for all you cool people, podcast drops on Tuesday, March 26th, which by the way is 2 days before my birthday. And yes, you probably should send me something for that, but I digress. I want to let you know that in April, just a couple weeks after this podcast goes live, we are hosting our next Visit Grace event on Wednesday, Thursday, April 24th, 25th, an opportunity to come spend 2 days with me and my team at our office in Denver. We limit this to 10 people. We just started doing this last year, and we have been blown away by the positive responses from people that have come. Not only are we giving you every doc, every position specific system manual, every checklist, every policy, we're giving you everything we have in digital editable format, but we're also going to train you for 2 days on how to run a successful property management business. We're not going to tell you how to do leasing. We're not going to tell you how to do that in the weed stuff. I believe the success of your business by and large is about the business end of the property management business. So what I want you to do is go onto our website, pmbuild.com, go to the events tab. We have a whole page on there titled Visit Grace. You can watch some video promo stuff. You can read comments from people that have gone there previously. But if you're interested, I would love to meet you in person. I promise it will improve your business like nothing else. Hey, my friends, I hope you found this information helpful. Until next time, as always, I wish you success.